Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to learn about the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport and meet a Space Force Guardian. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
November is a month of the military family, a time for us to recognize and celebrate military families for everything they do. Military families know what it means to sacrifice. They stand by and support us through drill weekends, annual training, and long deployments. We are able to conduct missions with the highest level of professionalism because of their love and commitment to us. Our families truly understand what it means to serve this nation. To support military families during the month of the military family and beyond, visit Beyond the Yellow Ribbon online. Finally, to Minnesota's military families, on behalf of the soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota National Guard, thank you.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Rick Dale, who is chairman and president of the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And he's been a volunteer there for 6 years. And Rick, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Very much a pleasure to be here.
And you brought a special guest with you today. Do you want to introduce her?
Yes. With us today is Linda Meyer. Linda is our volunteer coordinator, one of only four part-time employees we have at the center. And Linda's been involved in the center for quite a few years.
Linda, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Rick, I want to start with you a little bit. I know you come from a military family, and you served, and you've got a son serving. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I served in the United States Air Force from 1967 to 71. Father and father-in-law are both military officers during World War II, and I have five brothers that served from the Korean conflict through Vietnam. And like you said, my youngest son is a current gunnery sergeant in the United States Marine Corps.
And you're retired.
And I'm retired.
But you've also been involved with an organization called Tee It Up for the Troops and run some golf tournaments to raise some money to help our military families.
Yes, I do. I've been involved with Tee It Up for the Troops for 10 years, and over those 10 years, I've done 17 events.
Very good, sir. Congratulations. And how did you get involved with the Armed Forces Service Center? I'll bet Deb Kane had something to do with it.
Well, Deb was not the first person to contact me. A friend of mine by the name of Terry Branham, who preceded me as president of the center of the board, he and I met through Tee It Up for the Troops. He was very involved in the center. I was very involved in Tee It Up. And as it turns out, today he is on the National Board of Directors for Tee It Up for the Troops. And I'm now chairman and president of the Armed Forces Service Center, so we've kind of swapped roles.
Different volunteer roles, and away you go. I want to talk a little bit about the AFSC, the Armed Forces Service Center here in the Twin Cities, is not affiliated with any other of these type of activities around the country.
No, it's completely independent. Occasionally, folks will come in and they'll say, oh, I've never been in this one before, and referencing USOs. We're not affiliated with the USOs or any of the other six independent centers. There are seven independent centers throughout the United States, but we're all independent.
And this one here in the Twin Cities, I can remember it being open when I went in the service to join in Vietnam. So before the pandemic, it was open night and day, 24/7 for almost 50 years.
49 and a half years until March of 2020. We were 24/7, as you said, and it opened in November of 1970, and we were hoping to make it to a 50th gala event in November of 2020, and it didn't happen because of COVID. We did shut down early March of 2020 and reopened in early November of 2020, so we were down about 6 months. And we're unfortunately not open 24/7 just now. We are open 16 hours a day, 8 a.m. until just about 11 p.m., So it's a reduction mainly because of the lack of volunteers just now.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we talk to Linda. But I want to go back to the fact that it's been open for all of those years. Now, you're a nonprofit.
Nonprofit and financed strictly through donations.
So the key to the Armed Forces Service Center here in the Twin Cities is volunteers and donations so you can pay the bills. Excuse me, and you've had a really good partner in Delta Airlines.
Yes, Delta Airlines has been very good to us for many, many years.
And, of course, we were out there just before the pandemic started and did a show from the airport because you moved from outside the gates into a beautiful new facility inside the gates. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So The center opened, as I said, in November of 1970 and remained on the unsecure side for 49 years. Due to the remodeling of Terminal 1, the space that we had been in for many years was about to be demolished at mezzanine level above North TSA. And Mac had to find a new spot for us and did a very nice job of finding us a space basically at the end of the C concourse where the A and B concourse meet, significantly more space than we had, much brighter space than we had, more windows, and so we get more natural daylight. As I said, a significantly larger space. We now have probably close to 5,000 square feet, where I think we were probably under 2,000 square feet in the old center.
Yeah, it's just up the stairs from the concourse there.
Yes, if you're familiar with the airport and you're on the front end of the A concourse, there's a Brugger's Bagels. If you walk around behind the kind of the backside of Brugger's Bagels, you'll find an elevator that'll take you up to level 2, and that's where we are.
We're talking about the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport on Minnesota Military Radio. And Linda, we were fortunate enough to be out there to do a show from that the new facility. Can you describe it to us? Do our veterans like it? I'm sure they enjoy it compared to the other place.
We've had a very, very good response to it. Many people who did visit our old center have commented how bright it is, how much room we have. The facility itself is something that they've said is very accommodating, and they do enjoy the facility.
I seem to recall they had rows of some really cushy chairs and a big television up there and some snacks and even some bunk rooms.
Exactly. Currently, our bunk rooms and showers are not available due to COVID, but we have 30 bunks for men and 10 bunks for women, and we're certainly hoping to get those open again sometime in the future. And our volunteers are always very welcoming, and we do enjoy seeing our guests that come in and being able to offer them the best we have. And that does include food items and beverages in our facility.
And Linda, who's eligible to make use of the Armed Forces Service Center?
We currently and have always offered our active duty military as well as retirees with valid military IDs.
And reserve and guard troops that are coming and going?
That's correct, yes, that are traveling for the military, yes, as well as their dependents.
And Rick, I want to come back to you. When you remodeled and built that new center, I think you got some support from the legislature, the state of Minnesota, and, of course, Delta helped with that as well.
Yes, we did. State of Minnesota provided us grants of $100,000, and that was very useful for us to outfit it. Mac pretty much built out the physical space, but we were responsible for furnishing it and providing all of our kitchen equipment, which has to meet, you know, state health department regulations. So it's high-end kitchen equipment, not inexpensive. So that $100,000 from the state of Minnesota was a big help to us. And then we had some other, I'll say, private donations, Delta Airlines, a number of veteran service organizations, American Legion posts, and VFWs around the state donated, $1,000 here and $5,000 there, so it all added up.
So a lot of great partnerships that allowed you to upgrade to a modern facility that is really comfortable.
It's very nice. It's if it's not the best, it's got to be in the top five in the country.
Well, Rick, we only got about a minute left in this segment. How do you pay for the food and the supplies and all the things that you have available for our military that come through?
So, again, I'm back to donations. We really live on donations from our, corporations in the state that assist us and the VFWs and American Legions and their auxiliary units. And big help.
And you're always looking for volunteers, which we're going to talk about in the next segment.
Yes.
All right. Great talking to you, Rick and Linda. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Rick Dale and Linda Meyer from the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And Rick, we were talking earlier, it was open 24-7. for 49 and a half years, and then along came COVID-19, the pandemic. That wreaked havoc on the AFSC. Can you tell us what happened?
Well, it hurt us in two major ways. As I said in the earlier segment, we received significant donations from a number of partners across the American Legion and VFW organizations in the state. The money they donate to us, they get through their various charitable gambling operations, which during COVID, most of them, if not all of them, were shut down. So their fundraising capability dried up, which meant their ability to donate to us and other organizations went away as well. So we got hit pretty hard there. The second hit came from the fact that the volunteer workforce tended to be in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. So we've lost probably a quarter, at least, of our volunteers who either decided they weren't going back to the airport again, or they had an adult child that said, "Mom, you're not going back out to the airport under these conditions." So that hurt us, and a number of them were the volunteers, incredibly important volunteers to us. All of them are important, but the ones that were able to work midnight to 4 a.m. and 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. were the ones that allowed us to be open 24 hours a day for 49 and a half years, and we lost quite a few of them. So right now we're only open 8 a.m. to about 11 p.m.
And, of course, at the same time for about a year, air travel just almost stopped.
Well, certainly did among the traveling military. DOD pretty much shut down travel this summer for several months during the summer of 2020, which also meant that if we did have anybody that wanted to use the center, they were probably not currently active duty military.
So how long were you actually closed?
We closed March 8th, and we reopened reopened November 8th of 2020.
Okay, so you're open now still only on a limited hours because of lack of funds and lack of volunteers?
Lack of volunteers as much as anything. The funds have, we were able to cut expenses fairly dramatically when we weren't closed for 6 months. So we weathered that as far as this current fiscal year goes, but we do need the fundraising to pick up going forward as we try to get back to, 16 to 20 to 24 hours operations.
So you want to get back to your pre-pandemic funding level and,
yep,
and donations and also get back to 24/7 going forward. And Linda, I want to come to you. You're the volunteer coordinator. When we were out there doing that show, Deb was telling us that there were volunteers that have been out there for sometimes decades. And there's lots of flexibility in the hours that you can come out. I think she was telling us a story about one couple that came out for 4 hours once a week. But that's what they could do, and they filled 4 hours that were important. What are you looking for now? I know that Rick has said we're trying to expand the hours of 24/7. You need volunteers. What do you need, and when do you need them?
Well, I guess the primary thing that we need is people that are willing to serve those who serve. That's one of our primary conditions of being at the Armed Forces Service Center. We want people that are friendly and are willing to greet our guests with that attitude. We do need people to serve those overnight hours to be able to open up 24/7. The beauty of being at the Armed Forces Service Center is that we do have a self-scheduling system. So a volunteer, people can go out to our system, take a look at their calendar, take a look at our calendar, and say, "Hey, I can serve that day," and go in and put themselves in, schedule themselves. We do have the ability for volunteers to say, "I would like to serve every week at this time on this day," and their schedule will perpetuate. They can just keep that schedule. So there's lots of different opportunities for people to volunteer when they're able.
So, Linda, if I'm thinking about being a volunteer there, first question comes to mind is, where do I park? And how do I get in and out of past the security so I can come to the Armed Forces Service Center?
It's very easy parking. Parking is paid for, so you don't have to, that doesn't have to come out of your pocket. And after you have gone through our training process and The process is you fill out an application. There's a training process that you go through. Once you've served after that for 3 months, you're eligible for an airport badge, which allows you to get through the security. We use the North Checkpoint because that's the easiest way for you to get to the Armed Forces Service Center facility. So everything, your way is paved to get to us. We make it as easy as possible for you to serve at the Armed Forces Service Center.
Now, Linda, you and Rick have both said we need people to take some of those overnight hours. That might mean that, especially in wintertime, you're showing up at midnight and you're maybe going home at 4 o'clock in the morning. Is there a security issue? Do any of your volunteers feel nervous about going back to their cars? How do you deal with that?
We've not heard that before. They're in the airport, so that security is provided as just as a normal passenger would be provided. The parking ramps or the parking lot that we use are employee parking lots that are very close to the doors. They're well lighted. We also have the privilege of designated parking spaces that are quite close to the exit doors. And we've just not heard that concern before.
So you're taking good care of your volunteers, making it easy for them to get in there, free parking, passes to get in and out, quick to get in and out. We're talking to about the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport on Minnesota Military Radio. Linda, one more question. Before the pandemic, approximately how many volunteers did you have on the books, and how many do you think you have now? Just rough numbers.
Around 210 right now. We're running about 130, 135.
So you need 100 more volunteers.
That would be our optimum, and we would like to have more people that are willing to work the overnight hours, as Rick said.
But as you say, it's self-scheduled. There's some flexibility. If your hours are different this week and next week or even the week after, pick the hours that work for you, put yourself in, show up and take care of our traveling military. And I'm sure a lot of your volunteers are former military themselves or from military families.
Absolutely, but that's not a requirement. We do like to see our former military, but as long as you want to serve the people that serve, you're welcome at the Armed Forces Service Center.
Very good. Rick, it sounds like we need to do some recruiting here. We need to get 100 new volunteers, and I hope everybody listening to the show that's anywhere near the airport gives you a call. And Linda, if they want to, do they just go to your website to sign up? How do they do that?
Yep. Go to mnafsc.com and click on the volunteer tab. And you'll just follow right straight through. We've developed a new online application, and it will lead you right straight through. That also links to our online scheduling system, so you'll be all set to go.
Very good. That's mnafsc.com. AFSC is Armed Forces Service Center. Mm-hmm. So, Rick, we got to do some recruiting, get you about 100 new volunteers, and we still need to beef up the charitable donations.
Yes, yes, we do, very much. We'll be reaching out on our board of trustees. We have representatives from American Legion and VFW districts, most of the districts that are in the local metro area. So they are our ambassadors back to the individual posts to tell the story about the Armed Forces Service Center and relay the message both for fundraising and for volunteer recruitment.
And you're a 501c3 nonprofit, so anybody that makes a donation, whether it's individual or the veteran service organizations, is deductible, and you can give them what they need to deal with that on their taxes.
Yes.
Very good, sir. Glad you could make it back into the studio. Linda, it's good to see you in here. I just hope that we can get you all the volunteers you need and get your money back flowing again, because the troops are traveling, and we need to take care of them. We didn't have time today, Rick, to talk about you attend dignified transfers, and there's troop airplane that come through, and you take care of them.
Yep.
And all the things you do out there is just fantastic, taking care of all those troops. And I want to thank you both for your efforts, your volunteer efforts, and for coming to visit us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was Rick Dale and Linda Meyer from the Armed Forces Service Center at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. When we come back, we're going to meet a Space Force Guardian. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet a Space Force Guardian. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota has a unique team of organizations who collaborate together to find and house homeless veterans. A key tool for these organizations is the Minnesota Homeless Veteran Registry, which helps these organizations to assist veterans who are experiencing homelessness and need access to stable housing. Participation is voluntary for veterans, and anyone can refer a veteran to join. For more information and to access referral forms, please visit Minnesota Homeless Veterans Registry page at minnesotaveteran.org. Ending veterans homelessness is a focus for Governor Walz and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I am proud of the progress the team has made, but I won't be satisfied till we're able to declare the end of veteran homelessness statewide. Anyone who knows a homeless veteran can call 1-888-LINK-VET. That's 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Today we have a first for Minnesota Military Radio. We're going to meet our first member of the United States Space Force, and her name is Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Colonel, I understand you come from a military family, and you had a couple of grandfathers that served in a big war.
Yeah, I did. Very proud to carry on the legacy of my grandfathers, one of which who was a German Jew that got out of Germany in the 30s, then rose to be the youngest first sergeant in the European Theater of Operations in Patton's organization. And my other was a first lieutenant in the Signal Corps that single-handedly captured a German town guarded by an entire company with just four men. So, yeah, pretty amazing set of grandparents I had who did some incredible things for our country.
And, Colonel, I understand that you went to school to become an astronautical engineer. Is that correct?
That is. My undergraduate is there from the University of Minnesota. I am very much a proud Minnesotan. And then went on to get graduate degrees in astronautical engineering and in national security studies.
And I understand the tragedies of 9/11/2001 had an impact on your life.
Yeah, they truly did. That absolutely changed my trajectory. As I graduated from college that year in 2001, I had been looking for some civilian jobs, and they weren't appealing to me all that much. But when that event happened, within a few days, I was driving from the Twin Cities up to Duluth to see my girlfriend, now wife, and I broke down in tears seeing an American flag on the overpass, and made it to her house, walked in and said, "I'm joining the Air Force because I wanted to give back. I wanted to be part of something bigger than myself and help protect the freedoms that we all enjoy."
And ma'am, over 20 years, you rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, so most of my career has been in the Air Force. I just transferred to the Space Force several months ago at my first possible opportunity. Not too many space or astronautical engineers left in the Air Force these days. But I've spent 10 years of my career designing and developing satellite systems. While that was going on, I did deploy as part of Operation Iraqi Freedom to both Qatar and Iraq. And then I've spent a number of tours here in D.C. doing legislative affairs, developing strategic plans and budgets for the Air Force and now the Space Force. I've commanded at the squadron level doing research into counter small UAS systems, otherwise known as drones, and other offensive cyber activities. So I've had a lot of amazing opportunities in the military, and I'm so thankful for the places I've been able to go, the people I've been able to work with, and all the neat things I've been able to do.
And you're currently assigned to the Pentagon?
I am. I'm currently assigned to the Pentagon, working for the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Space Acquisition and Integration, doing policy work.
So our newest force, the Space Force, is busy getting ready to protect us.
Absolutely. Space Force, you know, protects the way of life that we all enjoy. It's so strange how much or how little thought we put into what we use every day, like GPS, that is run by the Space Force. Without that, you don't get where you're going when your car is, or when your phone's giving you directions in the car, or you don't make credit card transactions. And the Space Force really does put up some amazing capabilities that both enable the Joint Force, deliver options for conducting and defending our assets in space, and then for providing things that people all over the world use every day.
We're speaking with U.S. Space Force Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram on Minnesota Military Radio. And Colonel, along the way, you were married, you had a couple daughters, you had a busy 20 years.
I really have, but it's been such an incredible journey to, you know, build the family, meet the teams, and work with the people that I've had the pleasure of working with and the honor of leading. So couldn't be more thankful for where they've taken me. You know, the biggest challenge, I say, for the family life of getting away from Minnesota and most of my family that's still there is, you know, not having access to free grandparent-based babysitting. But that's something, you know, one of the small sacrifices we have to make to join the service.
And ma'am, I think we have to pivot here a little bit. You've had some personal issues that you've been dealing with that have affected your life journey and your career in the military and your family. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, of course. I happen to be the senior ranking out transgender service member within the military. And that has been a huge challenge, particularly over the past 5 years, as transgender service members have been on a roller coaster ride of policy highs and lows about the euphoria for finally being able to be our authentic selves and to reach our full potential. And then to have that threat of losing our jobs because of tweets that came out saying we were a burden on the service and couldn't be accepted or allowed. And then again this year, to get back into a position where our service is valued and is considered something that the military should encourage and take account of so that we can bring in talent from the most diverse set of Americans who are otherwise capable of serving. It really does enable a stronger military going forward.
Now, ma'am, we've only got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but at the risk of sounding ignorant, you're still married. You still have your two daughters. And can you define for me and for our audience transgender? What did that mean you were dealing with for most of your life, and what does that mean now?
Yeah, so at the very basic level, all of us, when we're born, a doctor looks at us, really our external features, and gives you a sex, which we call a sex assigned at birth. But for some of us, you know, who we are inside doesn't match what that label placed on your birth certificate was. So at a certain point in your life, depending on what that mismatch looks like for you, transgender people take action to bring themselves in line with, you know, who they've always been internally. So to me, the way I look at it is it's really just reaching for your full potential as a human and enabling you to move through the world and be recognized as the gender you've always been.
And you've been blessed that your wife and your children understood, and you are now out. From what I've read, it seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah, I count my lucky stars in the fact that I have had an amazing, incredible, supportive wife, though it hasn't been easy for her, because society's perceptions of her change simply based on who she loved. And she knew I was trans from just after we started dating, about 3 weeks into that, even though at the time I struggled to express what it meant, because there's a lot of internalized issues that we need to deal with to accept that, is this just something I'm going through? Is this a phase, or is this who I am? So I shared some of my confusion with her about that when we were still quite young. And she's stuck through me with all of that as we've kind of embraced what this has meant for our family, even though there are some very difficult moments to go through and still are. She's lost friends and family over this. And even though I've been very lucky in who I've engaged with and the support of my leadership, the people around me, It's not easy, and I am so thankful for her support, for the love of my children, who have been incredible. I'm a really lucky person.
Ma'am, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with U.S. Space Force Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram. And, Colonel, I wanted to just bring up the fact as a transgender officer, I know that over the past several administrations, they've recognized transgender, then not, and now they're back again. How did you and the other people that are transgender deal with that over the last several administrations?
Well, though there were these moments of joy and these moments of fear, what we generally did is we laced up our boots and we went to work. Whether it was at a time where we could be ourselves or a time where we were under threat, the best thing any of us could do to prove our value was to accomplish the missions that we've been given. And because of how the military values competence, despite changing attitudes in the government, most of us have been quite well respected within our units because of what we bring to the team, because we have that mission-oriented focus. So for us, it was all about staying attuned to the task at hand and getting the job done that the military has asked us to do.
So you've developed some acceptance within the military.
Absolutely. And ironically, I look back and I thank the previous administration for the actions that shone a spotlight on our service in a way that had never been done before. When the ban and the tweets initially went out, about 50% of the American public and 50% of the military approved of open transgender service. Several weeks after those tweets, it was up to 70% because of the media spotlight that was on us. The fact that we got to show the stories of transgender service members, like a drill sergeant in People magazine, a trans military couple going on the Ellen show, and so many other local and national stories that showed these are just service members. These are people that signed up and could pay the ultimate price for their country and just want to do their job. So in a weird way, it made a big difference towards our acceptance to have that negative aspect put on us.
And ma'am, along the way, you've become president and spokesperson for SPARTA. Can you tell us what that organization is and what its mission is?
Yeah, SPARTA is a nonprofit organization that represents transgender service members. We have approximately 1,350 members at the moment that are all actively serving trans members. And what we do is we educate and advocate on their behalf for inclusive policies. And then we also provide peer support. Because policies have changed so much, they're still new, and any new military policy can be a challenge to navigate. We help provide individuals that have been through it and can provide guidance and mentorship to others. So it's an outstanding organization that does some great work. Encourage folks to check it out. www.spartapride.org is our website. We really do amazing things for the trans service member community.
And you've also participated in the writing of a book called With Honor and Integrity, Transgender Troops. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this project started, it's a collaboration between me and a professor there at Hamline University in St. Paul that wanted to gather the stories of service members and present them as authentically as possible. So it's got an introduction and a chapter that gives kind of the history and overview of transgender military service and all the events that have gone on in the past 10 years since the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that led through these bans and the opening up of service. But importantly, it's 26 stories of service members just doing their jobs and kind of the funny or the sad or the incredible things that happened to them along the way because they happen to be transgender. That officially releases on November 9th. You can find it on Amazon or find me on social media or anywhere, and I'll be happy to figure out how to get you a copy because it's an incredible look into the lives of our service members today.
And ma'am, we've just got about a minute and a half left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about your experience with becoming transgender?
Well, one of the things I like to say most about why is it important for the military to embrace diversity, to be inclusive, is the fact that we are going to fight and win our wars in the future with brain power. Long gone are the days where you would stick a rifle in someone's hand and a few weeks later they're ready and trained to go take that hill. We are a highly technological, highly trained, highly capable force that needs brain power. And if those brains just happen to be in transgender bodies or in any other body that is capable of serving, capable of meeting all the standards that the military imposes, then I want them fighting next to me, and I think the military and the country should also want them because we need their talents.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That was U.S. Space Force Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhardt. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's always an honor.
Can you believe we're heading into November? 10 months of this year are already behind us?
Oh, yeah. It's been a good year, actually, even with the pandemic stuff going on.
We seem to be recovering from that. I hope another version of that doesn't come up. But are you and your riders back to kind of normal levels of activity?
Yeah, pretty much. We've got our protocols in place and everything else. So even if we have another round of that, we can still be at the funerals unless they limit the amount of people.
Well, let's talk about those funerals. If a family has a veteran who dies, and they're interested in having the Minnesota Patriot Guard riders come out, how do they arrange that?
Actually, it's pretty easy. If you go to our website, which is mnpatriotguard.org, and on the left-hand side, it says Request the Patriot Guard. Just fill out that little form, and somebody will get back to you and work with you with the arrangements, and we'll be there.
Now, the important thing for people to understand is you don't just show up. You only go if you're requested.
Yes, we only go if we're invited. We don't want to impose on anybody, so we will only come when we're invited. And it really needs to be a family member, immediate family member. We've had cases where other people said, oh, this would be a good idea to go, and the family wanted a private funeral service.
Uh-oh, not good, not good.
Not good, not good. So we pretty much switched into the mode of, we need to talk to an immediate family member.
Now, once they've requested your presence, then you put that on a calendar. You put out an email to the riders. How does that work?
Both. We have a calendar that we keep up. It's at mnpatriotguard.org, and all of our missions are on there. You can pick whichever ones you want to come to. We send out emails to people that have signed up, just so that they get the reminder and all the details of what's going on. And we only use the email address you give us for Patriot Guard business, which is funerals, welcome homes, any of the missions that we go on.
Who's eligible to become a Minnesota Patriot Guard rider?
Anyone. You don't have to have a motorcycle. All you need is a 3x5 flag, a pole, and gear to be out in the weather, whether it's hot or cold.
And a good heart.
And a good heart.
Because it's all about what, Tim?
Honor, dignity, and respect.
Very good, sir. And now, we're getting to November. We're getting to that season called winter. It means you've got to put your motor scooter away, and you better be driving around in a cage, Tim.
Oh, I know. Yeah, everybody will be right in their cages, And it's not as prestigious, not coming on a motorcycle, but we want to be there to give that honor, dignity, and respect to our fallen heroes. So we'll come in our cages. It's a lot harder to park, 15-20 cars than it is, 15-20 bikes.
But you can do that too.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, I understand we had the Armed Forces Service Center on earlier on the show, and they said that there have been a lot of dignified transfers from previous wars coming through the airport pretty good numbers. Do you guys attend those too?
Oh, yes, we do. It's an honor to stand at flag line when the people bring their loved ones out of the airport. We stand there and have a flag line for the welcome them home.
The Patriot Guard goes to the funerals. They go to departure ceremonies when we deploy troops. They go to your favorite welcome home ceremonies when the troops come home.
Yep.
But you also go to some of the veterans' homes.
Oh, yes. Yep. Well, we're kind of limited because sometimes the veterans' homes, you know, they get a little worried about pandemic stuff, and they'll ask us to skip a day or two or whatever. But we go and play bingo with the veterans, and we have barbecues with them. We, you know, they're in a home. They don't have a lot of family. Some of them don't have any family, and we go there and visit with them, and it's always a beautiful thing to go and sit and talk to a World War II veteran. He can't remember his family's name, but he can tell you the kid that was next to him, how many freckles he had on his face when they were in a foxhole, you know, 60, 70 years ago.
Very good, Tim. So we urge all of our listeners to go to your website. Your website one more time?
Yep, mnpatriotguard.org.
Go in there and take a look at it. Sign up, become a writer. And you can grow up to be someone like Tim Leonhardt. Tim, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom.
This is Tim Leonhardt from the Flag Line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We have one message today. Are you a current or former member of the military looking for a job with a company that appreciates your service? Join Career Force for our 15th annual Veterans Career Fair on November 3rd at the Earl Brown Heritage Center in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. All veterans, current service members, and military spouses are welcome to attend the best veterans hiring event of the year. Find out more at careerforcemn.com/veterans. That's careerforcemn.com/veterans. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us today, Rick Dale and Linda Meyer from the Armed Forces Service Center, Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram, Commissioner Larry Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Menke. Please join us next week when we hear from the VA Patient Experience Officer and get an update from the Association of the U.S. Army. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts of the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.